I wish I were Jean-Luc Picard. I don't think it would be that hard to sip Earl Grey and save the day while boldly going through the stars. Or maybe I'd be Captain Mal, a shining six gun as my pal. Sexy, broken, full of jokes, even as things have gone to hell. Oh, I wish I were Starship Captain.
Holy shit, it's Geeks Explicitly, and I am here with Brent Newell. How are you, Brent?
Doing great, man. How are you doing this evening?
I am doing excellent. We are filling in for Jonathan J. Reinhart, who is your normal host for Geeks Explicitly.
Well, because I don't know about normal.
Who is your standard host for Geeks Explicitly, because Jonathan could not record this week, and he really, really cares about the podcast. He didn't want a week to go by without somebody at least filling in for him, so Brent and I volunteered, and I have cracked open a bottle of red wine, and I am ready to go. How about you?
I am great here with my glass of, well, water, unfortunately.
Well, you know, certain messiahs could actually remedy that for you, so I would work on that ability right now. You know, work, get that cleric up another level or two.
There we go. I'll do my best.
Ah, good. Good. So this is Geeks Explicitly, which means we are allowed to swear. Although
fuck
I
no.
Yeah, well, I haven't really felt the need except for that intro there, but maybe I will. Maybe I'll get my swear on in a little bit.
There we go.
But I thought that we would take this opportunity, since we've taken over Jonathan's podcast, to talk about us, not about him.
Right.
What do you
think
of that?
We're more important.
That's right. I mean, generally speaking, you know. Hey, you know, exactly. You can't make it to your own podcast. I guess, you know, you leave it in our hands, and we're going to run with it.
There we go. Right. Yeah.
So Brent and I both have several projects in the works, as well as our own podcast, and we also have the site Troll in the Corner, for which we both do some writing and editing and what have you. So I figured this might be a great time to talk about what we have stirring in the pot, and go from there, and maybe we can tap into some of Jonathan's audience, because as you know, as Jonathan is very quick to point out with every single episode, he does have the most popular podcast in the Troll in the Corner network. So first, a little plug. If anybody wants to listen to other episodes of Geeks Explicitly, or they want to hit up any of the other podcasts on the Troll in the Corner network, all you need to do is go to trollitc.com/TCPN. That stands for Troll in the Corner Podcasting Network. And boom, you will have hours and hours of entertainment right at your fingertips.
And all sorts of good stuff, and quite a variety. It's actually one of the really neat things about the network is it's not just a whole bunch of versions of, you know, two guys over Skype talking about, wait a minute.
Shit. Oh, my God.
Yeah. But no, there's a lot of cool stuff out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell me about your podcast, Brent. Let's jump right in with you.
All right. Sounds good. So my podcast is kind of a little different. I have a podcast called Monsters of the Shattered World, which is a fictional podcast about a young scholar out in a sort of old D&D style adventuring world. And he's out facing all sorts of horrible things that he has only ever learned about in books. And realizing that, gosh, yes, those are folk who are really nasty. And so it's basically just a letters home from him to his mentor as he's discovering all these things and learning that adventurers are not just hired guards, actually. We're on episode 3 now, and the plot's starting to really kick into high gear for season 1.
That's excellent. And now, who is doing the editing? Because I have to say, out of all the podcasts on the network, this is the best edited podcast.
No question. So the wonderful Quinn Conklin is doing the editing on that. So all I do is write and record. Quinn puts in all of the sound effects and music and all that stuff to really make it come alive, make it sound like one of those wonderful old The Shadow Knows.
Yes, absolutely.
It's great stuff. He's amazing.
And for those who don't know, the role-playing community, especially the indie role-playing game community, has sort of a Kevin Bacon effect with people, where you're never really that far away from a bunch of other people in the whole community. Quinn is part of the wonderful Occult Moon, who put out toys for the Sandbox. And Quinn also happens to be an author on the site as well. He also writes wonderful articles for us. And he does a bang up job editing your podcast with the background sounds and the music and you know, people not going stuff like that. It's just he does a great job.
Yeah, he's absolutely amazing, and it makes the podcast sound just 200% better.
Yes,
absolutely. Great stuff.
So I really enjoy that podcast. Now tell me a little bit about the artwork. Where are you getting the art from this?
So the art is by the one. I'm going to completely murder the pronunciation of his name. Let me see if I can pull it up here. So I'll do my best to not completely destroy that. But And thanks to you, sir, for pointing me in the direction of this.
Yes, this particular artist, who I'm going to make Brent say his actual name because I want to hear how you say it, has actually worked with me in the past before. He's illustrated several pieces for Encounters, Plots, and Places, and he did the cover artwork and some interior art for Argyle and Crew as well.
Mm-hmm. So, Kairul Hisham, I hope.
Hisham is how I pronounce his last name. Kairul Hisham.
Sounds good. Of hishgraphics.com.
Yeah.
And he does this great old school black and white ink drawing stuff that just really captures that whole sense of nasty things coming at you with the intent of eviscerating you.
Which is really cool. And I'm going to take a second now and talk a little bit about Indie Talks, which is my podcast. Which went on a very brief hiatus. It's a bi-weekly podcast, which means it either comes out twice a month or once every other week, however you want to look at it. And for a while there, I was cranking them out once a week just because I had so many people that had assented to be
that
on
was
there
amazing.
Very
quickly.
Yeah, I was blown away. I would have had more out there for everybody else to hear, but real life kind of got in the way, and I had to take a couple of weeks off and break a couple of schedules that I've had, which I'll be rescheduling folks shortly. To get everybody back sort of into the swing of things. But recently we just had Jess Hartley on, who has done a ton of work for the World of Darkness. And then prior to her we had Brennan Taylor on from Bulldogs, who's also done a number of other great things. And it's gonna actually drop the day before this podcast comes out. So if you're listening to this right now, you might have already heard this, but this coming Wednesday, which will be the 19th, I have Jason Morningstar from Bully Pulpit Press. Yeah, Fiasco, Endurance, and a bunch of other amazing titles.
And his name just crops up everywhere.
Yeah, and it's a really fun name to say to Jason Morningstar. I think he is blessed with a name like that, honestly. Yes, I wish I could, you know, Ben Gerber. I don't know. You know, it just doesn't really do it.
He sounds like he's just kind of a role-playing test tube baby or something.
Yeah.
He was named specifically to you know, he was built at birth role-playing games.
And we had a great time. He was a really good interview subject, and he very graciously came on because he's pretty freaking busy right now. He just completed a Kickstarter for his next game, Durance, which takes place on a far future penal colony in the world, you know, somewhere out in the middle of nowhere. And you get to play somebody from both sides, you know, the criminals and also the folks that are running the penal colony. And, you know, Fiasco is just on Will Wheaton's tabletop on YouTube and Felicia Day's channel, which is pretty freaking cool too. So yeah, he's been kind of busy, and cranking.
We need to figure out some way of doing that for our games.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
So talk a bit about, Indie Talks and kind of the format. I mean, you know, what do y'all talk about?
We talk about what it takes to break into the gaming industry or other industries as well. I mean, I've had folks on there from Zombie Orpheus and Dead Gentleman, who just recently had the highest independent film Kickstarter of all time, raising almost $500,000, I believe, a little over 400,000, 450,000, I think it was. They did Gamers, Darkness Rising, and the original Gamers, and they do the Journey Quest series, which is in season two right now. They have a really cool model for all of their movies. They're all Creative Commons licensed. So they pretty much have decided that they're going to raise the funds to make the stuff from fans ahead of time, since they have a track record and they've already put out some really cool stuff. Then they will make the film and put it out there. And if people would like to purchase it on a DVD, they can, but they'll always be able to watch it for free online, which I think is awesome.
Cool.
Yeah. And, they have just, done really, really well with their Kickstarter, and they've also filmed, some crucial scenes at Gen Con. Right at Gen Con. They were given a room of a couple thousand people to do a live show in front of, and then they filmed for a couple of hours after that.
Wow.
Yeah. So Indie Talks is basically we talk to folks who are or have found their own way into the industry, whether it's tabletop gaming or movies or television or art or crafting, pretty much whatever strikes my fancy. And I go out and I talk to folks about this. And I have a somewhat standard set of questions, you know, when did you start gaming? Do you game? How did you break into it? Everything always comes back to tabletop gaming in one form or another. And then we talk about how people write these things and how they found themselves selling products online and in some cases even making a living doing it, doing nothing but it.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's pretty cool.
Now, I have a question for you.
I have an answer for you.
Excellent. Then we're done. We can move on.
Good. Okay. Next.
So, and I confess I have not listened to every Indie Talks episode, but how often do you come across those creators who don't game as much as they used to, or does everyone tend to, you know, keep up at pretty much the same level they always were at?
Well, the standard model seems to be kids. As soon as you have kids, you just don't game as much as you used to. Mm-hmm. But every single person that I've talked to, I feel kind of bad because I think I'm the one that games the least out of everybody. but that's just due to a lot of my gaming groups sort of moving geographically farther away. And hopefully I can remediate that a little bit with the internet, but we'll have to see. But a lot of folks that are into game design actually spend a good amount of time playing. Mm. And I do the same. I tend to do board games now more than role-playing games, even though I produce more RPG stuff. I like writing the RPG stuff because it's creative and it's less mechanical for me anyways, unless I'm doing Pathfinder stuff. But I can get more into the creative side of things. But I have more of a chance to play board games. And I think I'm finding that with some of the older folks, you know, my age group in their 30s and 40s. Because people move away, people have lives, everybody has a day job almost, some people have kids, most of us are married, you know, so it goes sort of down that route.
Definitely. So one of the interesting things about board games, actually, is that board games require such intensive playtesting, such intensive efforts involved, that it's just much harder to say, you know, I'm just going to write some supplement for Dominion. It doesn't really work that way.
Right, yeah, no.
You know, you just kind of can't come in and add new stuff that easily. So it's just a lot harder than saying, here's a monster for old school hack.
Hey, do you smell that? I smell a segue coming in.
Hey, there we go.
Let's talk about board game designs, because board game designing is hard. One of the guys that I talked to, a buddy of mine, Alf Siegert, who has designed several games, including several in the Troll line with Bridge Troll and Trollhalla, and he just did Road to Canterbury, and he has a new game that's coming out shortly that he just successfully, kickstarted. Board gaming is hard work. It's a lot harder to do that stuff. I have tried my hand at board game design several times. And I've only come up with one game that wasn't, I'll sell it for a buck online. I do sell it. It's called Mi Gato Se Incendia, or My Cat Is on Fire, which is not about lighting cats on fire. It's about saving cats who happen to be on fire.
So I see.
Before I get any angry emails, which you can send to indietalks@gmail.com or bgerber@gmail.com, it's not about harming animals. I am a cat owner. I am a cat lover. But it's about, you know, your cat escapes out into the neighborhood and you have to find it and get it back into the home before something horrible happens to it.
I see.
It was okay. I enjoy playing it, but it's a little bit more random and a lot less strategy. That leads me to my next and actually most current project. And we're going to take another step into the future here, because tomorrow, which is Tuesday, there will be an article on Troll in the Corner about my latest playtesting escapades with a game I'm working on called Upgrade Wars.
Ooh, excellent. Yeah.
Which I sent you, I believe, the original cards and the original instructions. I'll have to send you the updated instructions. I'm working on them right now. But I've been able to get a ton of playtesting in, a lot more than I was hoping to, which is really good. Found a bunch of bugs, did a little bit of changing around, added a entirely new victory condition. Because the problem that I found with it is the game was too balanced.
You could play
it forever until you ran out of cards, and then whoever happened to have the last giant robot left basically won.
So, Mr. Gerber, would you do us a favor and let us know a little bit about how Upgrade War works?
Absolutely. Upgrade Wars takes place in the future, where humanity has colonized the solar system, and there is this substance called nano goo, which is basically goo made out of nanos. It's stuff that you can use giant or
small.
Well,
you know, there are going to be so many iPod nanos out there.
That's right. They're just grinding them up. You can use it, and you can use 3D printers to print virtually anything, from your filet mignon dinner to a giant spacecraft, you know, depending
and
on the size.
And what's more fun.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. So people have anything and everything they could possibly want, which means people are bored. Mm. You want a Ferrari, you print a Ferrari. You want that, you know, rare champagne, you print the rare champagne. Mm. So what happened is that some brilliant soul out there decided to reinstate gladiatorial games, but without the bloodshed. So basically the premise of the game is you drop between 2 to 4 giant 3D printers on these abandoned rocks, you know, big asteroids somewhere out there in the solar system. And what these printers come with is a host of little machines that dig up raw materials from the asteroids and turn them into nano goo. And then there are several different types of programs that you can then purchase. There are .war files, which are basically the blueprints for printing out giant combat robots. And there are .upg files, which are the blueprints for deploying upgrades, UPGs, to these giant warrior robots made out of this nano goo while they're in the field. My original idea was to make a deck building game. But it isn't really a deck building game. It's more like an engine to get giant robots out there, because in a deck building game, as you go through the game, your deck gets progressively bigger and you're trying to weed out those cards that you don't want anymore and get the cards you do want out there. In this game, you start off with a deck of 12 cards, and if you ever end up with more than, say, 22 cards, you've either got a strategy that I haven't really thought of yet, or or something's just going horribly wrong for you. So it's something of a deck builder. It's strategic in that you have to purchase the cards that you want to play with. And then it's also tactical in that you're deploying these robots through several zones that you and your opponents can move through. And then you get into the tactical combat phase. And there are several ways to win. The first way is you are the last person left with a printer functioning. And the second way to win is that every time you destroy an enemy, .war file, or an enemy robot, basically, you get to keep that card. That's a victory point.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, if you take out somebody's printer, well, that's worth 5 victory points. Mm. When 3 piles of cards are depleted, the game is over. So whoever has the most victory points wins. And the way the game is set up is there are 5 piles. Each pile of cards has 10 cards in it. So there are 5 piles of upgrades and .war files that anybody can purchase from. And then everybody has their own personal arsenal of 3 cards that only they can purchase from, unless something in the game allows them to purchase from something else. So the playtest went great. I am actually, in the next week or so, I'm going to be revamping the rules, and I will probably get a copy out to you and a copy out to Jonathan and a few other people, and then I think I'm going to open it up as a print and play public beta. And we'll
see
how it is. Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So I think that's one of the interesting things about board game design in general is how you have, in card games as well, is inevitably you start with an idea, you sit down, this is going to be great, you sit down, and then, you know, 2 months from later, it's a completely different game.
Yeah. This actually was kind of startling to me, because I designed the entire game, I would say, in about 5 hours. I was walking to the train, listening to something, and out of the blue, the idea came to me, hey, this would be kind of cool if I did this. And by that lunchtime, I had written out all of the basic premise of everything in Notepad. And that's either the sign that's a really good idea or it's a really bad idea. And this turned out to be really good. And what I found happening, a couple of nights ago, I actually had got a chance to do a 3-player game, which was pretty cool because I hadn't had a chance to do a 3-player game before. And I found myself not thinking so much about what I need to change anymore, but thinking about how I could win the game. Enjoying playing. And that to me was kind of a big milestone because it's gotten to the point where it works. And now I'm actually having fun playing my own game, which is, I don't always have fun reading my own stuff. I don't always have fun trying to play my own things. It's kind of neat to see people do it at conventions or things like that, but I've done it before. But this, you know, this was a lot of fun. So.
That is awesome. It's just really neat seeing a game like that.
Yeah, I hope it actually works out. This is going to be the first game that I'm not going to try and publish on my own. I think I might actually try and shop it around to a few other, you know, folks who do that as a business. So, if you are listening, game publisher, there's a really cool game that would be probably pretty inexpensive to print out since it's mostly just cards and a player mat for every player. So, you know, give me a buzz.
Give Ben money.
That's right. And if you go to Board Game Geek and just search for Upgrade Wars, you can find the little section that I've set up. There's not a ton in there right now. There's a couple of pictures of some of the promo cards and some of the demo cards that I have, and a couple of pictures of me actually playing the game with myself and with some other folks. As the instructions and the public beta test comes up, I'll be getting some files up there for folks to download.
So how long before the ultra rare foil cards come out?
That will be as soon as Wizards of the Coast purchases the rights.
Okay.
Yeah.
Duly noted.
Yes. So, and the only thing that I really need to get this game off the ground, publishers take note, or anybody else who's interested, is some artwork on there and some iconography. I can never say that word correctly. Iconography, so that you can read the card a little bit easier, because right now they're just pretty much blank face cards with some words and numbers on them. And speaking of artwork, you have something in the works with a little bit of artwork.
So, indeed I do. So this grew out of something I did a long time ago, and without getting too deep into the historical stuff. Mm-hmm. I stumbled across I hired an artist for another project and, who does just amazing anatomical work. Mm. And just one of these artists who spends time every day drawing muscles and, you know, just really, really understands how all this stuff works. And, I had this idea in the back of my head a number of years ago for this story that just kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And I ended up sitting down and writing this idea for a comic book. And I wanted to do a more adult, grown-up sort of comic book.
Sure.
It wasn't superheroes or what have you. And I wanted to do something that was just different. And I ended up just sitting down and writing this thing. And contacted the artist, and mm-hmm. she ended up doing stuff in that style. Because for some reason, everyone in the comic book is a giant cat. and one of those things, again, it just had to be that way. I don't know.
Yeah, right, sure.
She had the right style. So over the past couple of years, she's been drawing the comic, and a couple months ago, she finished, issue one. So right now I'm in the sort of unenviable position that I have this, I think 25 page anthro comic that no one's ever heard of.
Yeah.
And that I now need to sort of get out there and let people know about so that I can somehow find a way of funding and affording later issues of the comic book.
Right.
It's a tougher proposition because, you know, there are plenty of comics out there and, you know, art's expensive.
Yeah.
So, you know, figuring out how to do it is interesting. Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on that? Where are you going to go with this?
So I'm looking at different options. The, mm-hmm. the main plan at this point is, right now she's doing some tweaks to the art, some things where inevitably you look back and say, I can improve that background.
Yeah.
So she's going to go back and make those changes. Once those are done, I'm planning on releasing issue one probably for free as a PDF.
Mm-hmm.
And getting the word out there and basically spending some time just kind of marketing it and letting people know about it. And then I'm going to try kickstarting later issues.
Oh, that's cool.
So the idea is to put that out there and, you know, at least kickstart issue two. And if I get more money than that, I can do later issues. It'll probably end up being 5 or 6 issues total.
Yeah.
So, you know, end up being a nice little trade paperback size book. And, so yeah, we'll see where that goes. It's,
awesome.
It's a weird kind of story.
Yeah.
So it's something of a tough sell, but we'll see where it goes.
Hey, you never know. I mean, we could see you on an AMC behind the scenes DVD in a couple of years, you know?
Sure.
Yeah. Talking about how, you know, well, after they did The Walking Dead.
Right. So, yeah, they got CGI cat people.
Right.
And,
right.
It was very cheap. So yeah, it's great. And a big market for that. You know, folks
love furries. Of course. Absolutely.
So.
You know, almost as big as zombies. You gotta be in there.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, fantasy furries with giant axes.
Right.
No problem.
Hey, you know, you sold me on the giant axes part, and the fantasy furry is just a bonus. So, now say you get 5 or 6, issues of this out. What are your plans for printing? Any ideas?
Yeah, so, a couple of options out there. There's actually a site called, I believe, Shazam.com.
Uh-huh.
Which does a good job, from what I've seen, of printing individual issues, you know, inexpensively, so folks can go and buy like one issue for $3, for
nice.
Example.
Well, that's cool.
So beyond that, I don't know. I mean, and I think we talked about this. You know, Lulu is kind of the the standard folks go for, but it's really hard for people to find that. So I may end up shipping it, putting it myself. I'm also looking at using Amazon Fulfillment.
Yeah.
So, you know, finding a printer that can print it decently and then putting a bunch of copies up on Amazon and selling it directly on Amazon.
There is a, and this might be of interest to other folks listening to this too, there is a company out there called CreateSpace. They're who I use to do like the Argyle crew and the encounter spots and places stuff when it's actually in print form. That will go through, they tie in with Amazon. And they're print on demand. And the cool thing about it is they're pretty good quality. Mm-hmm. I found them a little bit easier to work with than the DriveThruRPG folks, which is Lightning Press. Not actually DriveThruRPG. They partner with Lightning Press. They're a little less antsy about the size of the graphics that you send in. But it still comes out looking absolutely amazing. And they tie in with Amazon Prime. So if you use CreateSpace and you choose Amazon as a distribution partner, which is part of a part and parcel of doing this, you can get your stuff print on demand and sent out within 2 days.
Wow.
Yeah, which, and it works. I've had, you know, family members surprise me by going out and buying something and they've gotten it in 2 days and it comes out really nice.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, so definitely keep that in mind.
Cool. Yeah, thanks. I'll do that if I can, you know, get the $50,000 I'll need for the rest of this comic book.
Oh, that's all you need?
About
a month of ad revenue from the site. We'll hook you up.
Oh, good. Perfect. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, yeah. I mean, as we all know.
Wait, did you say $50,000?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you said $50. I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, but come on. You know, we work in the online role-playing business. We're rolling in dough.
That's right. You know, I am drinking $3 Trader Joe's red wine right now, and I have not lit anything with a $20 bill yet, including cigarettes or cigars. So, or fireplaces. That actually kind of brings me to another kind of cool discussion that I've been having with some folks on Reddit in the RRPG subreddit. There's a whole RPG subreddit on there. A little while ago, I put out this little game called Something Went Wrong.
That's right.
And it's basically a fantasy role-playing game. It's a group of experienced adventurers who are going out on their one last adventure to sort of line their pockets for their retirement, and then they're going to call it quits. This is a
and it all goes exactly as planned.
Exactly, yeah. This is a competitive RPG in that you're not going for a total party kill, you're going for the last character standing. the title is Something Went Wrong because it's about their trip out there, and then just something went wrong. My absolute favorite times in role-playing is when something goes horribly wrong in a funny way. Like I had a first level assassin in this Palladium thing that we were doing. And we as first level characters did fairly well against first level enemies. And I almost died twice trying to cross a river because something went wrong. I failed. I had a pretty high for first level swim skill. I failed it every single time I rolled it. I dunked myself. I went under logs. People couldn't find me in there to pull me out. It, you know, and that kind of spurred on this idea of, geez, what if we do that as a role playing game?
Yeah.
So the basic premise behind it is that, you know, you got four stats, and you fill them out 1 to 4. And then you can pick a character class. You can be a fighter, a thief, a wizard, or a cleric. And that's it.
Perfect.
That's pretty much what you get. And then you go out there, and as these high-level characters, anything you want to do, you can do. You can succeed at anything, with the exception of hitting things for damage or casting spells for damage. When you do that, you have to roll a d6 and add it to your appropriate stat, and then the other creatures do the same thing, and we see who wins. But you're pretty experienced characters. You're pretty much kick-ass.
Yeah.
The caveat to that is that on every single encounter, and the game is broken up into encounters, the encounters are broken up into rounds, and each round lasts for roughly 5.67 seconds of real time.
Roughly,
yeah. So you have a non-combat action for 2 seconds, and then the other 4.67 seconds is taken up by combat. Every round, a new player becomes the GM. Their character is suddenly not in the game anymore. They're off wandering around doing something. And you earn XP as you kill things as characters. And then when you're a GM, you can spend XP to roll on these miss ability tables.
Mm-hmm.
And what those are awful things that happen to the other characters. You can only roll on them, though, when the other characters actually succeed at something. So you can succeed at anything you want to, and most likely you'll succeed at combat against some of the smaller, lesser beasts out there. But succeeding comes with a price, because you may hit that guy, but you may drop your sword in, you know, in doing so, or you may cast that spell, but you may, whoops, accidentally cast it on the enemy and the rest of your party. And you know, yeah, it just goes around like that. And then the last person standing is the one that gets all the money and gets to go home to the pub and brag about how something just went horribly wrong. And there's some other mechanics in the game, like every time, you finish a counter, you get to roll on the loot table. And being these adventurers that are high level, of course, you're wandering around with 50 or 70,000 gold pieces on you, which weighs you down. So the person with the most gold always goes last, and a few other things too. But I tried an interesting experiment with this. I tried doing something that I'd never done before, which is the entire game is available for free at DriveThruRPG. You can go and get it. It's a 13, 14 page PDF, free, absolutely nothing. Then if you're interested in getting a better formatted PDF that has some artwork in there, table of contents, page numbers, an actual character sheet, and a few extra tables that you can't get in the regular Something Went Wrong, you can come back and spend $3 on it. But not only did I do that, but I started talking to folks and posting on Troll in the Corner my sales numbers. Exactly how many units I sold and how much I made and what came out of that. And a lot of people were really interested. I don't know if a lot of indie folks, I know there are a few out there, but I don't know if a lot of indie folks, and certainly not a lot of the larger, actually established publishing houses, I think, go on and talk about their numbers.
Very few. I think, I mean, Fred Hicks is the only one I know that does.
Yes. Yeah. So I thought that I would, go on and take a snapshot of what a month for me selling RPG products through DriveThruRPG looks like.
And what does it look like?
Well, it looks a little bit like this. And keep in mind, my stuff is also on Paizo now. And it's also, some things are available through Amazon.
La-dee-da.
Yeah. but I'm not going to count that stuff because the reporting functions are not as good as DriveThruRPG. And with DriveThruRPG and RPG Now, I can give you rock solid hard numbers.
Unbelievably.
Yeah. So from, August 17th through today, September 17th, this includes free products. I have quote unquote sold 1,047 things. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah, which isn't too bad. Most of those are free things. I have sold 622 copies of Something Went Wrong, the free version.
Okay.
Which is, makes up, you know, a little bit more than half of that. Yeah. Yeah. Of that, I have grossed $123.97.
Okay. Yeah.
So DriveThruRPG takes 35% of their cut from me. They would take 30% if I was only publishing through them, but I do publish through Amazon and Paizo and occasionally sell through some other one-off things. So they take 35%, which is still really good. That's a much bigger cut than I would get from a regular publishing house.
No kidding.
But of course I get no advertising with it other than what I do through their site or through my site. So of that $123.97, I have taken home $80.58.
Not bad at all.
That's not too bad, but, you know, there you have it, folks, the glamorous life of an indie. I've made almost enough money to buy a week's worth of groceries. Almost. So, and it's interesting the way the model works at DriveThruRPG, because there are folks there in RPG Now who are reviewers, who get a lot of this stuff for free, or they get the opportunity to go and download it for free. In exchange, they're supposed to review it. And I also hand out a number of review copies. I'm pretty lenient with this stuff. If anybody approaches me on the blog, on Reddit, on Google Plus, on Twitter. I'm really interested in this game. I'd really like to try it out and review it. I'll send you a copy. It's not a big deal. If you say, hey, I'm really interested in this game, I'm not sure if it's worth $3, I'll probably send you a copy anyways, because.
Don't tell them that.
I'd rather have you playing the game than not playing the game at all. Which is another reason why I wanted to kind of do this Something Went Wrong for free and see what happens, you know, see if that model is viable. And both the versions of Something Went Wrong are also, Creative Commons licensed with the least restrictive licensing out there. So anybody can get them anyways. The $3 is kind of a way of saying, hey, I like that you're doing this. I'm going to kick you a couple of bucks so that you can do it some more.
Come on. It's only $3.
Exactly. And, to be realistic, I've over the past year or so, as I've been doing this, I've been taking a little bit of money every month, and I go out and I buy stock art with it.
I've
spent about $200 or $300 on stock art, not including art that I've commissioned for specific projects from specific artists. So really, when I give something away like this for free, or when I sell it for $3, I don't want to assign a worth to it, but it costs probably more than I'm going to make off of that. So for the gold edition of Something Went Wrong, 62 copies of that have been downloaded.
Okay.
For a total gross of $59, and I've made $38.35 off of that. So a whole bunch of people have gotten free copies. I've given away a bunch of copies. I went on Reddit. I gave away some. I gave away some through the blog and through G+. And a bunch have been downloaded by reviewers as well.
Mm-hmm.
Of those reviewers who have downloaded it, I have received actually zero reviews.
Wow.
Yeah, which tends to happen a lot. Encounters, Plots, and Places, which is the most expensive product I've put out to date. It's a 63-page PDF. It's got gorgeous artwork inside it.
Yeah.
Custom done by Hisham. A lot of Kickstarter stuff came in where folks got to sort of tell me what they wanted in the book, and then I went ahead and put it. The PDF sells for $6. 50 people have downloaded the PDF. I made $45 gross and $9.25 off of the sales.
Mm-hmm.
Of those 50 people, if you look at it, it's $6 a pop, $45 download. And I did put it on sale for a couple of folks for $5. A good number of folks have gotten this for free. I have yet to see a review.
Wow.
Yeah, which is interesting. And I've actually kind of come to expect this. I used to get a little miffed at it. I've kind of stopped miffed because what are you going to do? You know what I mean? And I'd still rather have it in people's hands than not have people read it at all. And who knows, 6-7 months down the lines, one of these folks may actually get around to it and do a review. I know, you know, these people are people. They have lives. They have other things they have to get to as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a month in the life of a very small independent. And I sold a few other things worth actual money, like Argon, some Arrhenius stuff. And two copies of a short story as well, which is under fiction. And that's what makes up that $80.58 for 1,047 things downloaded a month. And this has actually been a pretty good month. I've done a lot worse than this before.
Mm-hmm. I mean, $80 a month for an indie, RPG publisher is no small amount.
No, I guess not. I mean, it keeps me in the hobby.
Mm-hmm.
It allows me to buy that stock art that I want to get, and it allows me to maybe go out and pick up a game that I can review for the site or something, or invest $10 in a Kickstarter here or a Kickstarter there, and you know, and so to me, it's totally worth it. I'd be doing it if I was giving these things away for free, so you know, I guess making $80 is pretty damn good.
Absolutely. And it's still kind of amazing to me that this is something that we can all do from the comfort of our own, you know, offices or what have you.
Absolutely. So that is all I really have to talk about. I mean, the numbers for Troll in the Corner are pretty good. We're getting anywhere between 500 to 1,200 people a day sort of wandering through. These being Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. The weekends are pretty slow on the website because lots of us are either playing games or out into the real world doing other things. We had actually our biggest hit for the last couple of weeks was an article written in 2010, then in the Art of the Fireball, which made it to Stumble Upon, and then over 23,000 people liked it on Stumble Upon, which I thought was
pretty
cool. Yeah, yeah. So kudos for that.
Yeah,
that was pretty interesting.
So everyone use Stumble Upon, I guess.
Yeah. Yes. Sure. Go Stumble. That would be awesome. We would love it. And the other thing that we'd really, really appreciate from anybody listening to this is feedback. Whether you like something, you don't like something, you think there could be an improvement, you have a suggestion for us, there are many, many different ways to get in touch with us. You can get in touch with us all through the website just by leaving a comment. So on Brent's podcast, on my podcast, on Jonathan's podcast, on any articles that are published, leave a comment. We will talk back to you. We're very accessible. You can always email us. I believe that Jonathan's, well, I'll have to go on to Troll in the Corner and get Jonathan's webmail for Geeks. So, Indie Talks, you can hit me up at indietalks@gmail.com or indietalks@trollitc.com. And then, Brent, you have an email address that folks can get in touch with you at?
Yep, so my email address is pretty straightforward if you know my name, which you do now. It's brent@brentnewhall.com.
Mm-hmm. You can get in touch with Jonathan at geeksexplicitly@gmail.com, and you can also get me directly at ben@trollitc.com. So anything you want to see on the site, anything you want to see less of, anything you want to hear more of on our podcasts, if you'd like me to publish something, if you'd like Brent to move forward with his comic book, if you want Jonathan to get off his ass and it's writing this wargaming novel that he's working on, you know, send us a feedback, send us a line.
Absolutely.
Let us guys want to see. And I think we've gone way, way over on the length of this now. I know John tries to keep it at like 22 and a half minutes at 38 minutes and change right now. So we should probably stop. But Hey, this is Geeks Explicitly, and this is Brent Newell and myself, Ben Gerber, and we're not supposed to be on this podcast, but today we are. Join us. Jonathan Reinhart swears a lot and does a top five list about something.
Exactly. Thanks all for listening.
Thank you.
Here at Geeks Explicitly, we love feedback. You can email us at geeksexplicitly@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Please check us out online by going to www.trollitc.com/geekspodcast. This show is a proud member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network. If you enjoy this show, you might like some of the other podcasts on the network. Every Wednesday is a new episode of Indie Talks with Troll ITC owner Ben Gerber. Ben chats with people involved with indie games, movies, and much more. Every Thursday is a new episode of Geeks Explicitly, hosted by yours truly. All aspects of geek life are discussed. Wargaming Recon comes to you on the second and fourth Mondays of the month. I chat about historical and New England gaming. Monsters of the Shattered World, hosted by Troll ITC editor Brent Newhall, releases monthly. This story podcast details the adventures of a young scholar encountering strange monsters on a foreign planet. To learn more about the shows on TCPN, visit www.trollitc.com/TCPN. What is Wargaming Recon?
December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan.
3,000 miles from home, an American army is fighting for you.
We today have concluded an agreement to end the war and bring peace with honor in Vietnam.
The world will note that the first atomic bomb was dropped on Hiroshima, a military base.
Historical Wargaming for your ears, only at wargamingforums.com.
Oh, the humanity.
Hey there, this is Ben Gerber from Troll in the Corner, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my podcast, Indie Talks. Indie Talks is a discussion about independent publishing, where we take a look at indie games, the people who write them, and the people who play them. We're going to branch a little farther afield as well and talk to some independent television and movie stars and creators, as well as crafters, all of who are related to gaming in some way, shape, or form. So please join me on the Troll in the Corner Network at trollitc.com and give Indie Talks a listen.
This is Andreas, Apprentice of the White Order. I would like to invite you to listen to my letters, a humble collection of my observations of the various beautiful and very, very dangerous creatures that inhabit my world. I hope you enjoy it as part of the Monsters of the Shattered World on Troll in the Corner at trollitc.com.